Welcome back to the Roundtable on this 1st of October. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, we're joined today for our Roundtable panel by omnipotent emperor of public media, Alan Shartok. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Hugh Raymond.
Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist, spending a rare amount of time here in the lower 48. Nice to have you here, Rosemary.
Thank you.
NYPIRG legislative director and a guy who keeps an eye on the Capitol. All-around good guy, generally. Blair Horner.
Where's Joe?
Joe is not here today. I don't know.
I was promised Joe.
Well, you know what?
He goes away, he does something else, and then he comes back.
Think of it this way, Blair. You're a replacement, and I'm a replacement. So just go with the flow. By the way, technical...
I'm here.
That's
and I
true.
Am, too.
Yeah. So the A-team is here. A general note for our listeners on WAMQ. You're not listening on WAMQ right now, 105.1 Great Barrington. We are off the air. Engineers are headed to the site. I encourage you, if you hear this, which would be tough
how
if you're not listening.
That?
Well, I'll tell you how, because the first person to tell me about this around 5 o'clock this morning first was Roselle, who called me and told me. We were off the air. So I called over here, and they said, we are? So anyway, you go to 90.3, obviously.
Yeah, or listen online at WAMC.org.
90.3, and there are many points of intersection between 105.1 and 90.3.
And if you go to WAMC.org, you could always pitch in on the lockbox. That would be a segue. Over to you, Alan.
You could always pitch in on the lockbox. Ladies and gentlemen, there is less than... $29,000 now in the is that what it was?
$28 and change according to Blair.
Yeah, wait, that makes it sound like there's only that much in the locked box.
No. If we can get that 28, we get another 25. Listen to me, everybody.
Okay.
Listen up. We got another 25. We got another 5 from Alan Sagner. We got 25 from the Lennox Foundation.
So
we
that's 30.
That's right. But we don't get any of that if we don't make this $200,000.
No,
$300,000,
right?
No. You got it all.
Oh, I see. We
wrong.
Started with 100, and now we got to make 200. So
we started 100 with 100. Then they came along and said, if you can do this, you make 200,000, we will give you 25,000. Then Alan Sagner came in, he put another 5,000 on top of that.
What's the time limit on this?
The first thing on Monday morning when we start at 6 o'clock. If we don't make it, and if we lose it by 3 cents or $3 or $25, I'm going to feel very bad.
Okay, so glass half empty, Shartok says we're in trouble.
We are in trouble.
We have 28 and change to go. Oh, we have a few days to go.
And we came so far, we needed 200,000, you know, and now only 28,000, but, you know, an inch is worth, a yard or something like that.
What?
An inch is worth a yard. Oh, new math indeed.
Yeah. Ben Franklin is rolling in his grave as we speak.
Yeah.
Well, we begin the program on a sad note. The unofficial oldest clown in the world passed away. It'll be kind of hard to smile. Friends mourn death of Creaky the Clown at 98.
Is that Creaky, did you say?
Creaky the Clown.
Okay, not Creaky.
Floyd V. Creekmore, better known as Creaky the Clown, died last weekend after decades of making people laugh and sick children feel better. He was 98.
Wow. Was he named Creaky the Clown?
Creaky the Clown.
As he got older?
No, his name was
Creekmore. Always named Creaky
the
Clown.
So he's passed away. And I'm told that the hearse will be a very small car with about 12 people inside. And the by the way, the email address to complain, roundtable@wamc.org. roundtable@wamc.org.
Yeah. That just inspires so many elderly jokes. It really is in bad taste.
Yes,
we have to move on quickly.
Well, it's a clown joke, really.
It's a clown joke. It's a small car. They fall out of the car. The coffin. And then
people like me who are a little older than some of you. Feel particularly.
But you're not a clown.
When you make fun of, 98-year-olds.
He's a clown. It was a clown
He
joke.
Did service for years, and he worked with the shrines, and this is a very notable
thing. I told you not to start.
You know what? Horner's like, start with the clown story. All right. Now we move on to something very serious.
Speaking of clowns.
Okay. Now, this is very serious.
Oh, no. He wants to do the others. I thought you were going to go to clowns, Julia. In front of the Congress yesterday.
You know, Rosemary, I sent you a list of the topics, and they're in order. And so if you're going to move forward to promotion, just say coming up, and in a little bit, we'll do a thing about clowns.
Yeah.
Now, this is a story that has been breaking now for about 24 hours. Federal health officials say a man with the Ebola virus is in critical condition at a hospital in Texas. He's the first case of Ebola diagnosed in the U.S. Authorities are now tracking down anyone he may have had close contact with, but they say there's no risk to anyone who was on his airline flight because what they say is until the symptoms show with this particular virus, you're not contagious. He was on a flight 2 weeks ago because he had no symptoms at that time. Federal health officials say the man had flown from Liberia to Dallas September 19th, started feeling ill a few days later. Members of the Liberian community in the Dallas-Fort Worth area say they're skeptical of assurances from federal health officials that there's no risk of getting the Ebola virus from the man who is now in that Texas hospital in critical condition. The thing is, Rosemary, he went to the hospital, they sent him home, and for 4 days he was out there, and that's why there is a certain amount of, shall we say, urgency to finding out who he had contact with.
Yeah, it's this whole thing to me is about information control. CDC and our government wants us to be calm. You can't get it. It's very hard to get it. There's no chance. And if you do, we have magic pills in the United States and lots of resources. And the truth is, this was a man, we're saying for privacy, we can't find out anything more about it. Why was he in Liberia? There's a restriction on it. Only people of high priority are supposed to go. And obviously, it's someone who had reason to touch blood, feces, urine, vomit, or semen in Liberia. So what? Who is he? I want to know that. That would tell me if I'm in danger.
And they won't say yes.
They won't say because he has privacy. So HIPAA. Then he comes back. We don't know what plane he was on. We don't know how long
he was on
there.
More than one plane.
Exactly. He had to be from there. And then there's a really interesting experiment that CNN did. They sent their medical correspondent who had been in Liberia, and they got responses from the Customs and Border Protection people as they came back. And both of them, you know, the two reporters say, hey, we were in Liberia. We're worried. Figure we better report it. And they go, no, just check yourself in 21 days. And they go, okay, check for what? And they didn't really know.
Well,
didn't really know.
In fairness, they checked him for a fever, allegedly checked him for fever before he got on the plane. So, Blair, as a guy who's watched public health in New York State for a long period of time, who dropped the ball here? And is someone going to seriously be in some trouble for letting this guy go, knowing that he came from Liberia, and then saying, well, listen, it's just a flu. You're fine.
This is going to be a big problem. I mean, Ebola's been around now since the 70s, so it's not like it's a new disease, but it's obviously metastasizing in its own sort of weird way that it's spreading through West Africa. It's only a matter of time before things like this are going to show up in the United States. The question is, do we have the public health infrastructure to sort of deal with it? Because at the moment, anyway, there's no cure. So you have to quarantine folks. You have to identify them when they start showing symptoms, quarantine them, and then deal with them. So in this case, supposedly, they checked him for a fever. He gets on the plane. He shows no symptoms. How are they supposed to know? Now, the issue of him being on a plane and whether or not the other people could potentially be exposed, I think, is a real issue. And the fact that they're just sort of downplaying it, I'm sure the people that were flying back from from Liberia are probably thinking twice about that.
Agreed. But those experts, who at least who have been interviewed, and I'm not a doctor, I don't know if this is true, but they say unless you are showing symptoms,
that's right,
you are not going to pass this along.
Okay, so I don't want to be the naysayer, and I certainly understand the reason you don't want everybody with a cold thinking they have Ebola, and the system really gets corrupted in one way or another. But I have to tell you, look at the numbers in Africa right now. So to get these assurances that it's all okay, and that, you know, if you're on the plane, you know, and if the fever hadn't already broken out, and if this or that, and what about the guy going home, and who did he see then? To me, this is a very scary proposition, and we really have to be very careful about this.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're all over it is a hopeful sign.
What do you mean all over it?
I mean, it seemed like the CDC has a news conference about it, right? So obviously they're paying as much attention as they can. If the guy went to the emergency room and they sent him back, he must have been feeling pretty miserable. So I doubt he went out dancing that night.
I don't
think
somebody goes home and has sex with their wife or something like that. You don't know.
I don't think we're all over this at all. I think the CDC is on high alert, and they had a press conference because they're under information control. They don't want to panic. But we take measures all the time for safety on planes. We all take our shoes off now before we get in a plane because we might have a bomber. So why not a mask only from planes coming from West Africa? Is that such a terrible precaution to take? Well, and yes, they say it's not airborne, but we're the virus is metastasizing.
That's right.
And so that could happen at some point.
Become airborne.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, define airborne.
I can't think of like any way that on a plane you're ever going to touch anyone's blood, feces, urine, vomit, or semen.
How about mucus? You cough.
That's
mucus
not in
flies
the list.
Along at 100 miles an hour. You get it in the eye. Boom.
That's
done.
That's airborne.
However,
so
He wasn't, and I, again, with all due respect, I don't believe that the major concern is the flight at this point, but all those people in 4 days he may have had contact with. Well, and one of the news outlets showed this sort of a graph of all the contacts an Ebola patient in Africa had and how it spread.
Let's go back to information. We're getting conflicting messages. It's hard to catch it, yet we're going to worry about everyone he was going to contact with. Please think back. How many people in the last 4 days have had contact with your blood, feces, urine, vomit, or semen? I can't think of too many.
Well, what about that getting on a plane and then, you know, there's the toilet seat there and then, somebody urinates in the wrong direction and some of that gets on your skin? What about that?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, again, the medical information we get now is until you show symptoms, you are not contagious. I mean, that's what everybody's saying. Now, you know, who knows, right? But that's what everyone's saying. And so theoretically, when he's on the flight, if he shows no symptoms, whether or not you sat on the toilet seat or not, if assuming everything here that we're being told is true, then everything should be fine.
Okay, so now what happens in the...
In fact, there's been some press coverage of flights where people were sick going from one part of Africa to another, and others on the plane did not contract Ebola. So it's not... Apparently, if you get it, it's a serious problem, but it's hard to get it.
So I want to.
We're talking about thousands of people in Africa so far, not millions.
Well, no, but thousands. But the rate of infection is scary right now.
It's projected to hit 1.4 million cases.
Yeah, that's huge.
And but there's no public health infrastructure. They lay hands on dead people, and you're infectious even when you're dead after Ebola. I mean, part of it is a cultural issue. Part of it is a public health infrastructure issue. My biggest concern in the United States is these are programs that the federal and state governments have been cutting, right? So we even have less capacity to deal with these kinds of things than we had in years past.
Yeah. I just have a lot of questions. I don't pretend to be an expert, but I would be asking, okay, explain this disease to me. You can't give it to someone until you show symptoms, although you can give it to someone after you're dead. That's strange. And how does it go? This man is described now as seriously ill, yet four days before that, he was fine, showing not even apparently a fever.
No,
if he got
well, no,
plane.
He went to the hospital because he wasn't fine.
Yeah.
And they said, here's some antibiotics, go home.
Right. So that's the arc, perhaps, of the disease, that it goes from no symptoms at all to on death's bed.
So
maybe the screening isn't very
so
good.
So let me just put it this way. So we have a distinguished panel here, the three of you and one lesser. And the question then becomes...
I thought there was another panel you were talking and about. Someone else had come in the room.
Do you really believe...
He's listening to AMQ at the time.
Do you all believe that we're not in for it here?
No, I think that these kinds of diseases, in a world where you can easily move from one place to another, are going to be problems
Which is
forever.
The next question. You know, when we were bombed by the Japanese, December 7th, we do stupid things. We say, okay, all the Japanese have to basically go into these places. What do we do now? Is it likely that anybody who wants to come in here from Africa is not going to get in? I mean, how dramatic is this country's protection going to be?
All right, let's take a short break here. Email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll check the mailbag. If there's anything, we'll read it coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Downtown Schenectady Improvement Corporation and Schenectady County Visitors Agency, presenting the third annual Wing Walk tomorrow, 5 to 8 p.m., chicken wing samples and voting at 15 restaurants, proctors.org. Lake George Kayak Company, a kayak, canoe, and stand-up paddleboard center, providing sales, rentals, and lessons, lakegeorgekayak.com. And Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, InterimHealthcare.com.
Roundtable on WAMC, 27 minutes after 9 o'clock. It is the first day of October. Rosemary Armeo, Blair Horner, Alan Shartok, and yours truly, Ray Graff. Alan, the mailbag is open.
Yes, Peter says, folks, the first ER visit is the problem. In other words, waiting room and people in it, the water closet in the hospital. How did he get there and back? Taxi? Just asking.
That's very good. That's a good point.
Okay.
Bonnie, thank you.
Yes. And then, let's see here. Let's see here. From JR, Morning Table. That's us.
The Morning Flakes.
Corn Flakes.
Right.
Do any of you know if the virus can be transmitted as casually as coming into contact with someone who uses the toilet and doesn't wash his or her hands afterwards? From JR. And the answer is, we've been told no. Right? Haven't we been told no?
Well, it's an exchange of bodily fluids.
Right.
That's basically the issue. And so, and it doesn't appear to last very long, although the things I've been reading is when you're in a hospital setting, even your sheets can get infected. So I'm not sure where the line is on this.
And Katie wants to know, please excuse this question if it's been asked, but are we assuming the patient didn't tell the ER he had recently been in West Africa?
Excellent question. Yeah. And I don't know the answer to that. Rosemary, you probably do.
It is a good question. I believe it was not a secret. He did say that. It makes me wonder who it was. You know, there's not a lot of Americans.
Could be one
going
of your
to
friends
Liberia
from
now.
From the agency.
Well, CDC is going now, and they're trying to contact anyone who may have had contact with this person, and that is their job one at this point. Anything else?
Yes. Oh, there is.
Well, you have 30 seconds. Okay. Go, man,
from
go.
Sarah. Is anyone coming from West Africa, if anyone coming from West Africa is sick, shouldn't that raise a red flag? I'm sure it does.
Okay.
And Karen says, good discussion. Luckily, with Ebola, unlike the flu, no symptoms, not contagious. And that's in letters.
That's it.
The Texas hospital has had a problem. The word is mutate, not metastasize. I am a virologist. Good article. And she gives it to us, but we're not going to read that now. And then that's from Karen of the Center for Immunology and Microbiology Disease.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good. Let's hold it there, old boy. And if there are more letters, we'll read them on the other side of
when
the
news.
When
you said old, was that a shot?
No, it was a term of endearment.
I thought you were talking to me.
Well played.
I knew you weren't talking to this young vital woman.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We break for news. We're back on the other side. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's the 1st of October, don't you know? 9:36 is the time. Blair Horner is on our panel today. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, Ray Graff here in for Joe Donahue. Breaking news, people. An official with knowledge of the investigation says a New York legislator has been arrested and is headed for an Albany courtroom. The official, who was not authorized to discuss the case publicly before this morning's arraignment, says the arrest of Assemblyman William Scarborough follows a joint investigation by the State Comptroller and Attorney General's offices. The Queens Democrat was first elected to the Assembly in 1994. He acknowledged in March that investigators raided his home, offices, and hotel room, and an investigation of his daily expense claim, saying a misunderstanding of the Assembly voucher system led to the investigation. A call to his attorney by the AP wasn't immediately returned.
Is he smart enough to be in the state legislature if he can't figure out the voucher system?
Well, I don't know.
Raise the caution.
Yeah, one of the usual things is we caught somebody stealing here once. It was the minor league. And I said, what'd you do that for? And they said, oh, it's not all right?
I guess my more basic question is, New York State lawmaker arrested? This is news?
Well, apparently, according to Tom DiNapoli and Eric Schneiderman, it is news. They'll have a press conference this afternoon in Manhattan to discuss the case. The email address here, by the way, is roundtable@wamc.org. And Uncle Alan, we have more mail.
Okay. George says, anyone who saw World War Z.
Yes, Brad Pitt movie.
Didn't see it.
We'll be astonished at the way the Ebola scenario is slowly reproducing the plot of this fictitious horror film, and that's from George.
Right.
Okay. And then Dave says, have you heard that the Russian Ministry of Health and Sierra Leone has said that this Ebola outbreak looks like it has been weaponized? Thanks, Dave.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Oh, really? By whom?
I have no idea.
I think that's the sort of panicky thing CDC is trying to keep down.
I just read them, you know.
I understand.
Dear all, the flight from Africa to the U.S. is long. Isn't it possible that symptoms of Ebola could begin to show in a passenger during the flight? And isn't it possible to be exposed to bodily fluids in the bathroom from someone just beginning to show symptoms? Door latches, water taps, toilet seats, etc. And that's from Joan. And then we heard from Jennifer, my friend Jennifer, over there in Great Barrington. Hi, all.
Hi.
Great Barrington can't hear you.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And we mentioned this at the beginning.
I'm not, okay, go ahead.
No, feel free. I was just going to say 105.1 in Great Barrington is off the air.
I was about to go into that whole thing.
All right, please do. I'll have a sip of coffee. Tell me when you're done.
Hi, all. GB can't hear you. And we wanted to about this very important discussion. 90.3 is hard for me to get here. Thanks for everything. The truth of the matter is that we live around the corner from around. We get 90.3 very well. But, of course, a block, who knows what a block will do. And, of course, as Ray pointed out so perceptively before, you can get it online if you really want
to. Glorious stereo.
Yeah, and you can get the app, the WAMC app. It costs you nothing. You get it on your iPhone if you have one, or one of your phones, and all you can listen to it around the world, which I did from Cartagena. So I mean, it's very good. We're all doing it now.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Then.
But Creaky the Clown is not.
And then Tana said, "The bodily fluid that might be the scariest perspiration." No.
It's not on the list.
It's not on the
list. Saliva is not on the list either.
I have the list here. It's a blood, feces, urine, vomit, and semen.
Okay. And Lisa says, people should go back and look at the movies Outbreak and Contagion. In addition, we know that the planes are not being cleaned properly because there's not enough time for the flight attendants to do a casual cleaning between flights. And Sarah says, if anyone is coming from, we did this, from West Africa is sick, shouldn't that raise a red flag? And that's what we got so far. Sayla says, the Americans who contacted Ebola and were treated in the U.S. require an enormous amount of medical attention. While we may have the medical capabilities to treat an outbreak, can the average American afford the medical bill? And that's what we have so far.
So far, no outbreak. One case diagnosed here. So we will be following this.
And we're not even sure if the person's an American, right? I mean, it could be an African that was traveling and visiting relatives in Texas.
And hopefully they will identify who that is at some point. Right. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. The man accused of entering the White House with a knife is set to make his first court appearance today. He was indicted yesterday. Omar Gonzalez faces federal and local charges following the September 19th incident in which he's accused of jumping the White House fence and getting into the executive mansion through the unlocked front door. The head of the Secret Service was on Capitol Hill yesterday. Bipartisan thrashing is one was way
first time
one person
Congress
put it.
Gets together and how long, and it's to scold and ridicule. And actually, it was pretty funny with the stuff they said to her. And boy, did she deserve it! I've been bursting to talk about this.
Well, should she be fired?
Yes, and I've said up to now, no. Let's wait and see. Let's talk. Her performance was as bad as Sebelius defending her poor performance on Obamacare. I think what her resignation, if not her outright firing, her resignation will be turned in within a month.
And it seems to be piling on. Now you have two Washington newspapers reporting that 3 days before that breach, an armed security guard, who's also, by the way, an ex-convict, shared an elevator with President Obama at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. I don't see an
By the way, if I were a news organization, I'd be assigning someone to the elevator beat. Do you realize how much news we've had out of elevators? There was the Beyonce hurting her husband, then Ray Rice knocking his fiance out, and now this. It's elevator news.
Was it Beyonce or his sister?
The sister, but Beyonce was there. So,
oh, was there, yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's really hard to get into the elevator with the President of the United States.
I was wondering
if they would
thing.
Be a little, like, careful about
you know,
this. Like, some guy just wanders in with a gun?
Well, you know, the Senate.
Floor four, please, sir.
That's right.
Well, you know, Blair, the Senate of the United States has, you know, elevators that are only for senators.
Right.
And one of my son's greatest moments when he was working for Teddy Kennedy was when three conservatives were sitting in the elevator and said, come on, boy, there's always room for one more, which he loved. And which not only the liberals don't always do that, you know, they don't always.
Apparently the president did. I mean, and then this on top of the White House getting shot up by some guy with a rifle, right?
And so then you have the head of the agency responsible for this. She, A, doesn't tell them most of this stuff. It's come from newspapers who are getting it from leakers to Congress. So she's still not owning up to all that happened and cannot summon any sort of a response other than, oh, I'm sorry, you don't think I'm outraged.
No. She said more than that. She said it wouldn't happen again, and she said she took full responsibility.
Those were very bland, bureaucratic terminology. And finally, one senator, no, I'm sorry, congressman, says, I don't really have a sense of outrage from you. And she goes, I'm sorry, you don't have that sense. It was a terrible performance, both by her organization and by her defending it.
Well, I think the second part is right. It was by an organization. And she just basically came in. The question is, which is being raised now, is why was she appointed? What were the creds?
She's been there forever. She's got a long term. She's worked with the Secret Service, right?
For years. I don't think she's
been the
head.
Director. I think for 18 months.
18 months.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, well, that's true. She is brand new, and she was there to clean up all of the frat boy behavior that we've seen from Secret Service agents in the last year.
Yeah, prostitutes.
And she complained that, oh, well, you know, you make changes and there's pushback, almost like, oh, they did this on purpose to make me look bad. I mean, it was just a terrible performance.
Yeah. You know, you go into an agency. And they have problems there. You clean the place out.
Yeah.
And if you can't clean the place out, you get someone who can. Right. I mean, that's pretty straightforward.
By the way, it should be noted the security contractor with the gun, the guy with the gun was a security contractor. It was still a violation of Secret Service protocols.
He's got convictions for assault, too.
How does he become a security contractor
with
3 convictions for assault and battery?
Yeah, I mean, they dropped the ball. I mean, this is sort of like unbelievable. First of all, supposedly the most secure place on the planet, some guy jumps over a fence and runs in the door and gets tackled by someone going off duty. Not even one of the guys who's on duty.
Which she did not also talk about yesterday.
I mean, it's mind-boggling. The White House gets shot up and the Secret Service doesn't tell anybody for a few days. I mean, like, what's going on?
Well,
it's as if Creaky the Clown was running
all right,
Secret Service.
All right. Thank you for bringing Creaky back into it, Blair Horner from Nyberg. By the way... According to this article on the security contractor with the gun being in the elevator, interesting point, the president allegedly not told about the lapse in his security. So if you are Julia Pearson, how do you not tell the president, oh, you know, by the way, we dropped the ball on this?
Maybe she doesn't know. I mean, it's possible that you have this, you know, you see this a lot in security organizations. That they protect their own, the leadership is sort of an entrenched
in
leadership.
In any organization.
Well, yes, that's right. And it could well be that she's not in the loop and that she's not the leader. They're not afraid of her and she hasn't cleaned the place.
Here's something else that impressed me. She testified that in this past 5 years, 16 people have leaped over the fence. Okay, that's a problem. You got to do something about the fence or procedures for dealing with leapers, and that hasn't been done. It's just on every level.
The door wasn't locked.
The door. I loved when the guy held up. Did you see that? The congressman held up the sign for ADT for home security and said, "Have you guys heard of this place? Maybe you could contract with them."
Grandstanding, you know.
Tom wants to know: is this lady a Republican operative?
Who? Which lady?
Julia.
Ah.
Okay.
I see.
We that's right. That's right. And like that.
Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. 9:47, we'll take a short break here, Mr. Hopper, and then we'll talk about a new exclusive by Ken Lovett of the Daily News.
Support for WAMC comes from Haldora Rhinebeck. Women's clothing, fall collections, wool town coats, silk blouses, home textiles, Ken Ross sweaters, Hanro undergarments, new weekender location in Millerton, Haldora.com. Deerfield Cabinets, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing all wood cabinets, granite countertops, and other built-to-order options for kitchen, bathroom, and throughout the home. DeerfieldCabinets.com. And the ADK Cafe, a delicious kitchen in Keene, New York, serving home-cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. The ADKCafe.com.
It's the Roundtable on WAMC. It is 9:48 on your Wednesday morning, October 1st. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Blair Horner make up the panel. Here's one, an exclusive by Ken Lovett in the Daily News this morning. The head of a supposedly independent unit created to investigate state election law violations has kept New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's office in the loop about her work, the Daily News has learned. Chief Enforcement Counsel, is it Risa or Risa? Risa, right? Risa Sugarman?
Yes.
Included Cuomo. included Cuomo press aide Richard Azzopardi in a September 22nd email she sent to four Board of Elections officials. The email related to a pending inquiry over whether Republican State Attorney General candidate John Cahill's campaign should have publicly released an internal poll in its entirety after making a portion of it public. Quoting here, "Please forward any material in reference to this matter to me immediately," Sugarman wrote in the email, which in its header declared the importance of the message as high.
Okay, but let's try to explain this in easy terms. Remember when Andrew Cuomo decided that he was going to do away with the Moreland Act Commission, and you'll remember that that one of the accusations were from Ken Lovett, the very good reporter from the Daily News, who we'll see here later today, that he was getting, even though he said it, the Moreland Act Commission was going to be independent, it wasn't independent, and the Cuomo people were calling in the plays from the second floor. Now along comes this Blair Horner, and what's this one about?
Well, I mean, as Ray mentioned, I mean, there's this, it's like the size of the issue is I don't think the biggest concern here. I mean, they're talking about how she sent an email to the members of the Board of Elections. There's four members of the Board of Elections, two Democrats, two Republicans.
And the Board of Elections is supposed to be independent, right?
Yeah, well, you know, right.
It's supposed to be independent.
Right, and effective.
Yes,
right. There's a whole bunch of things it's supposed to be. And so she's responding, appears from the article, to an inquiry about the Republican Attorney General candidate John Cahill's release of a poll under New York State law. If you release a poll, you're supposed to release all the information in it. And then Cahill did not do that. And so there was this back and forth here. So the issue really, I think the people are concerned about is Sugarman comes from Cuomo's staff at the Attorney General's office.
And the governor's office. He worked in the governor, too.
That's right. And the concern at the time when she was appointed was that she's a former staff person. How is she going to be independent? You heard the same things when they created the new ethics panel. The two directors there are former employees of the governor. And then you had the Moreland Commission. So are these independent watchdogs independent enough, or are they really coordinating their activities with the governor's office? And I think this email heightens the concern, particularly after what happened with Moreland Commission, where now the U.S. Attorney's Office is actually looking into potential obstruction of justice because the way the administration was involved.
You asked an excellent question at the break, Blair, about why does a watchdog need a press agent in the first place? What is that all about? Even the excuses, kind of, if you take it on face value, it still raises some questions.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't understand. I mean, I can understand, I guess, from a management perspective, you get press inquiries all the time. But why aren't the watchdogs themselves making themselves available to the public that they're purport to serve? And in this particular case, you know, the argument that Sugarman's using in the Lovett article is that she doesn't have a press person, so she's relying on the governor's press person to be her press person. She may have to investigate the governor, and so it really is odd at a lot of different levels and may be a huge mistake on her part, both within in terms of the optics, but even the law.
And it really is all about optics right now. Is there any definitive proof that, for political reasons, the governor's office is involving itself with?
Well, Ray, one and one does make two.
Well, and Moreland, I mean, all of this stuff is overshadowed by what happened with Moreland, where there now is, you know, there is evidence that the administration directly was involved in the activities of the so-called independent Moreland Commission. And so in that backdrop, it makes everyone concerned and heightened the awareness about what happens here.
Speaking of optics, her response, as reported in the article,
Sugarman.
Yeah, Sugarman's response shows maybe why she does need some help with press relations. "I'll use who I want to use," she goes. And then when
she was using the governor's press secretary to answer questions to the independent commission.
Right.
Okay, we got that.
Right, and then when pressed, she goes, "I can't discuss private conversations." Not very good with optics herself.
I'm confused about this law, Blair, and maybe you can shed light on this, that if you're a candidate and you release information from a poll that you have to release the whole thing.
That's correct.
Isn't the whole idea to spin a poll to your advantage if you're running for office?
No, but that's New York state law. It's part of the IPP, or they don't want people going around doing that. The legislators themselves don't want it, so they pass a law saying if you use any part of it, you have to use the whole poll. What happens is we all get sort of heads up one way or another on various polls, and we know because we can get sort of an insider's perspective. But if they come on the air and they say that, then they're supposed to give the whole thing. I have my doubts about why this is a good law, but that's what they say.
So you will be speaking with Ken Lovett today for a program?
Of the Capital Connection.
For the Capital Connection program, and you'll find out more about this, I hope. Will you?
Or as Blair Horner always says, we'll be keeping an eye on the Capitol.
Oh, my God.
Don't steal
his line. Does he really say that?
He does say that. He says it every
time. It should go with Creaky.
It's like Paul Harvey saying, good day. We're used to that from you now.
Well, that's that way you know the end of it.
That's right. You know when to stop the tape. Blair Horner is here. Rosemary Armeo is here. Alan Shartok is here. And Alan, the lockbox.
Okay, the lockbox. Everybody, get ready. I'm sitting on pins and needles here. I'm very worried. I am.
You call that the Kishkas?
No, it's Spilkas.
Spilkas, right.
Spilkas is pins and needles.
Gotcha.
And so, although somebody will call up and say, no, it isn't.
Spilkas.
Okay. So anyway, we needed 200,000. We're down to... this is completely wrong. Oh, we need $26,715.
That's correct.
That's what we need. We've got $273,285. We get $25,000 extra dollars, plus Alan Sagner's throwing in another $5,000, and he made it plain to me, not unless you get the 25, and he means it. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're doing it. We're going to go into the fund drive if we can do this.
How do you do it? If you want to put in for the lockbox.
Okay, Ray, thanks for asking. You go to wamc.org, wamc.org, or even better, you could get right on the phone right now and give us a call at 1-800-323-9262, extension 150.
Right.
No. Extension 0.
If you call that, oh boy.
150 is my number.
Yes.
They can call
that. Well, then we get it.
Please feel free. He won't pick up, but feel free.
Because I'm here.
Yes.
Just hit 0. 1-800-323-9262. Hit 0,
yes,
and you'll be there.
The fund drive begins when?
I think it begins on Monday morning at 6 a.m., and you and I will be there.
Correct. And so if we hit that $300,000 mark, by the beginning of the drive, we have until 6 a.m. on Monday, we get another $30,000 challenge.
Right. So will it be at?
The one-third mark in the drive when we start.
Will it even? Well, yeah. Because
or maybe more.
Yeah.
Depending how it goes.
Well, that's right. Because everybody has an ability now to say, okay, let's end the fund drive. Let's end it before it even begins. Now, there are those people who love the fund drive. There are, and they tell me all the time, I'm not giving any money for the lockbox because I love the fund drive too much. I love to hear from our people. If I'm in Great Barrington, I like to hear from people in Saugerties or down or up and the rest of it. So there are a lot of people who love the
fund. Can you get me their numbers? I'd like to maybe disabuse them of a few things.
Yeah, well, that's who they are,
okay.
And we have a lot of fun on the fund
drive.
We'll
be here anyway. I mean, we'll be playing banjos and telling
jokes. That's a shot.
You will play your banjo. You didn't play your banjo last time.
You didn't say we'll be playing. You said we'll be playing the banjo. You didn't say you'll be playing your banjo. And I think I heard a parenthesis in there that said something like badly.
not at all. In fact, you surprised me the last couple of times. It sounded great. The new banjo sounds good.
Yeah.
And, I'm looking forward to this. Monday at 6 a.m.
You're such a liar. How can you get away with that? Gosh, I'm
He controls the show. He controls the microphone.
I'm filling in as host and doing the best I can. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Only about a minute here to go. What do you want to talk about? The Jersey man who shot down his neighbor's drone or Tracy Morgan who can't believe Walmart is blaming him for the injuries caused?
It's just a response in a court filing. They're not really blaming him. They said people in the car aggravated what happened to them by not wearing seatbelts. It's kind of boilerplate lawyeries.
In case you've missed it.
Oh, that's right. There is
that hit by a Walmart truck.
That's right. That was driving too fast.
Yes.
20 miles over the speed limit, and the driver was almost at his drive time limit.
Yeah, the suit says he was over it, that he hadn't slept. He had violated law by not sleeping.
Mm.
But a person in the car was killed.
Yeah,
yes,
right.
And Morgan was seriously injured.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. So we'll see what happens.
It's sort of like your basic American response, right? Is, you know, somebody files papers saying, oh, no, it's not our fault.
I think it's
for whatever it's worth, Gloria checked in and said, if you can't go to a low-level retail shop and have a security alarm go off when you leave without taking the white thingy off your merchandise, how can you leap over the White House fence without any hidden alarm going off? It seems better spyware is needed. And that's from Gloria. Mm. And
Or when you're not in the house, lock it up, right?
No.
They weren't there.
I know people who need to lock their homes. You're right. And then Don says, how about giving credit to the Washington Post reporter, Carol Leone, who has been cultivating sources for these stories for at least a year and a half. Note, all of the Secret Service stories have had her name on the byline.
Yes,
I think we'll have to leave it there. And I appreciate everybody checking in today at roundtable@wamc.org.
Still do it and get online.
Sure you can.
Yeah.
Thanks to Alan Shartok. Alan, thanks very much.
You're welcome. And thank you, Ray.
I appreciate it. Rosemary Armeo, thanks for being here. We'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Blair Horner.
I am in mourning.
For Creaky the Clown. And that's where we'll leave it. Hour two is on the way.